All right, back in the Arborwood Appeal and Mr. Telge, excuse me, on November 19th, 2024, 10:30 a.m. And Mr. Telgen is still in direct examination of Dr. Rosine. So, Mr. Telgen, go ahead.
Thank you. So, Dr. Razim, before the break, we were talking about the gabion and the water coming out of the pipe leading into the gabion. If I go back to exhibit A54, if I zoom in here on this gabion, which is, of course, now in a little bit different location, you had talked about a gabion having, I think, rock baskets.
Yeah, that's
And is that
correct.
what these features are?
You're not sharing your screen.
Ah, keep on doing that. There we go.
That's correct. Yep, that's right. So there are a series of essentially boxes, baskets that do a very good job of deflecting and dispersing to some degree these very powerful flows.
And just to orient, so I did this before I was trying my screen. You were talking about these numbers that Mr. Moody had calculated in the last appeal for the CFS coming out of that pipe. We can see that arrow points down to the discharge point. And then the water sort of blows out of that pipe and then it hits those rock baskets, right? And my understanding is that then the water sort of bounces or jumbles around, and that sort of reduces the velocity, and then it just sort of flows out of the gabion at a lower velocity.
At a lower velocity. That's right.
Right.
That's right. And a really important point, and I would like to reiterate this because we're talking about it in the context of the gabion and the outflow here, is that the Kapuscin soil is a loam or a silty loam, and those are highly erodible soils. So we've heard a lot of testimony that there's no channel here. We've also heard testimony that there is a channel, but regardless, there's no really defined channel that's cut, et cetera. We've seen it in some figures, we've seen it in others, but what we know is that there's not a deep incision. I think nobody will disagree about that. But when you put high velocity flows or high volume flows into this type of situation, we have the very real concern about soil erosion and incisions. And it's not hard to imagine that high volume flows coming out of this situation would cut rapidly through a loam or a silty loam down to the glacial till. So they would essentially cut roughly 3 to 4 feet. And what that does is it necessarily drops the water table, because the bottom of that channel now largely becomes what the water table. Now, it doesn't entirely, that's not exactly accurate, and I'm sure I'll be jumped on all over for that. But when you have a channel that down cuts, what it does do is it's basically acting like a French drain, right? It's lowering the water table locally right there. And a loam or a silty loam in the soil erodibility index is very high. It's somewhere between a 0.38 and a 0.48, which doesn't really mean anything to you, but I can tell you that highly erodible soils are the highly erodible soil category, it starts at about a 0.43. So we're right in that range. Even if we're not highly erodible, we're in the medium to medium high range. So it needs to be a real concern, because this outflow from unmanaged flows from the northern swale and the southern swale will introduce surface water that, my testimony, I said there's some surface water. Mr. Koger's testimony said there's no surface flow. I'm not sure I agree with that, but what we're talking about is percentages here. Is it a little, or is it more than a little? I think he says it's very little. I think it's maybe more than a little, but regardless, surface flow is not a dominant condition because we don't have a channel here. Now you put a pipe in there that's gathering unmanaged flow from the northern and southern swales, and nobody should disagree that there's surface flow then. Mr. Koger said this wetland doesn't have surface flow. We heard that. We all heard it. A pipe is surface flow. So we saw something that said six, you know, whatever. We don't have a drainage analysis that reflects the current analysis, but we know that it's a lot more than a little, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's going to be unmanaged flow. It's so, not that there's a BMP with a pond or an infiltration swale or any of these other things. It's a swale to a pipe to out.
Mm-hmm. And but the gabion is going to reduce the velocity. So I mean, even if assume the gabion is highly successful in reducing the velocity, would there still be a risk of channelization?
Yeah, absolutely. Because the most erodible materials are generally mid-range sands to silts, and mm-hmm. they can be eroded as low as, let's see, that would be, they can be eroded as low as about 0.8 feet per second is when particle size. When erosion begins to occur or the energy of the water is such that it can now begin particle transport. So the figure that we saw that you showed earlier in one of the applicants' earlier pieces showed, I think that was 15 feet per second. Remember, there were two numbers. One was a volume.
This is exhibit A54 again.
Right. 16.9 CFS. That's the amount of water, cubic feet per second. It's like gallons per minute. Mm-hmm. And then 15.9 feet per second. I believe that's the number before it hits the gabion. So I can't actually remember. But regardless, that's a big number, 16 feet per second. I'm telling you that silty gravelly loam it can be transported at around a 0.8 feet per second. So substantially less, three decimal places less than that, 0.8.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you say channel. And so what would adding a channel to this area do to the hydrology of wetland P2?
It would alter everything. It would alter everything. I mean, not entirely. Well, actually, I don't know that. It would alter it for sure, and the degree to which, you know, would require more study, which we don't have. But let's take for example the information we do have. So the information we have from the test pits shows that the water level is somewhere between at 1 and 3 feet right now, and we can review the test hole 101, 102, and 103. These are the ones I'm speaking about. You don't have to go to it, but those all show water at roughly 1 to 3 feet. Actually, I think the lowest one might not have shown water, but the upper two, the ones that are in the road and in the fill area, both showed water at 1 to 3 feet. So when you begin to downcut, that low point now becomes the avenue out for water. So at that point where that channel is, that's your water table. Now mm-hmm. it can come up some, but what that will do is it'll have a regional. Or, that's the wrong term, a localized depressing or lowering of the water table. So if you think about how these plants are what they're accustomed to, a certain degree of inundation and saturation. It's going to change that inundation and saturation regime. It's going to change that hydrologic regime. You don't have to take my word for it. This stuff is well established. It's well known that channel incisions can have a big impact, and they can leave the vegetation that is on the shoulders of a channel struggling with being disconnected from a water supply. I'm not suggesting that it's going to happen here, but just as a point of example, this type of information, this type of thing is known to occur. It's a very common thing that happens below culverts, particularly mm-hmm. in erodible soils. We have the luxury here of having a glacial till that's at about 3 to 4 feet. So that will stop the incision. But in some places I've seen around the Chesapeake Bay where they have all the, you know, they might have 10 or 15 feet of materials, that incision will go until it hits a non-erodible surface. And that non-erodible surface is either a clay usually or boulder cobble, but the silts and sands, fine sands, are highly erodible.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, to play devil's advocate, they could solve this problem during future stormwater review, right?
I'll be honest, I'm just going to say it. I am so confused by this review process. I don't understand which end is up. I don't know. We have a drainage report that doesn't mean anything because in my opinion, a 60% design, we move stuff a little bit. We have numbers that change a little bit, but we don't even have the, you know, I don't know what design, I don't know what drainage report said. No, I would say, Brian, my confidence that this is solved at stormwater is about, without some strict conditions, I would say I have very little faith in that.
Okay.
I think with proper conditions, it could be dealt with.
Fair enough. This is the examiner marshal's order in the first appeal, and the examiner marshal is summarizing in paragraph 219 the testimony of Miss Olson, Cecilia Olson, who has also provided a declaration in this case. She's the county stormwater reviewer. She says here, Miss Olson stated there is nothing in the code that addresses potential channelization related to a gabion. So what do you think now? You think this is going to get dealt with on stormwater review?
No.
I will note that, you know, Miss Olson is the stormwater reviewer. I will note when I was talking to Dr. Cook earlier, we had talked about the definition of what is an alteration, which is one of the things you're supposed to be considering when you actually do buffer averaging. And it actually had definition of alteration, which includes channelizing a critical area.
Yeah, right.
So at least the critical, I mean, so I'm not sure what Ms. Olson was referring to. I presume she is right that nothing in the stormwater code actually addresses channelization, but the critical areas code appears to address channelization, correct?
Yeah, that would appear to be correct. That's right.
Okay. So let's go back to exhibit F17.
Well, and actually, if you could just go back to that real quickly, there was a lower piece in there. You know, if you look at the end of it, right? So channels, yeah. They list all these items, but the last piece is, or any other activity that changes hydrology, right? And that's vegetation hydrology, because vegetation is dependent on hydrology, of course it is. And so my point here is that sort of channelization or downcutting will necessarily change impacts in hydrology.
Yeah. Right. So, yeah, relevant under the critical areas code, apparently not relevant under the stormwater code. I'm going to go back to exhibit F17. So, overall, this component of their plan, as it stands to date, generally speaking, good or bad impact on wetland hydrology?
It's not good, right?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. This, from what I observe here, this is a partial response to our concern. So our concern has been colluvium, interflow, and the French drain.
Hold on. I just want to talk. We're going to go to the French drain next. But I mean, I'm just saying this gabion, this surface outflow onto the slope leading down to wetland P2 that runs a risk of channelization. Just generally speaking, is that good or bad for the wetland hydrology?
It's not good for the wetland hydrology.
Okay. So that's a bad element. Let's go. Let's talk about the French drain. So I tried to draw my sort of silly, rudimentary drawing over here. But it's a trench filled with rock with a pipe at the bottom. Where does that pipe go to exactly?
That pipe goes to that same gabion, and presumably there would be a, what we refer to as an outlet control structure or some sort of maybe a hydraulic control structure. I'm sorry if it's sounding too Greek, but what that's doing is it's controlling the depth or the rate at which water is going to flow out of that. So presumably that pipe is going to go into a hydraulic control structure, which is going to control the release rate into the gabion. So we don't have any information about that. I'm making assumptions here. We have not been told. Actually, I think Mr. Moody may have mentioned that it would only overflow into the gabion. So the primary flow is to be from the infiltration trench into the permeable road base, which we haven't talked about yet.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a moment. But first of all, you've reviewed the SDAP plans. How deep is this trench drain?
It's a bit over 3 feet.
All right, let me get my pencil out again. So that's 3 feet deep. Yes?
Yeah.
Okay, from top to bottom. And he did testify, and we're about to get to his sort of add-on. So all of this information that we've discussed so far is on the most recent SDAP plans, yes?
That's right.
And then Mr. Moody then described that this French drain will be connected to something that goes under the road and then underneath the fill and ultimately discharges out into this area, correct?
That's correct, yeah.
Is that shown on the SDAP plans?
It is not.
Okay. But so the idea is you're going to have something sort of, I'm just drawing arrows, that just represents the flow, that puts the water out that direction.
Correct, yeah.
Okay.
Right, but we don't have any information on how that's proposed.
Well, we do, right? It's this drawing. This is exhibit B14.
That's right.
Right. So remember when we started this discussion, I said, you know, I was talking to Dr. Cook, and, you know, if you're trying to, address holistically the problems of this sort of monolithic construction project, which includes fill in the buffers and fill outside the buffers, one way that you can address that is to try and show the water's coming from someplace else. Another way you can address is to try and engineer a solution so that's no longer a problem. And so we've been given this exhibit as part of the applicant's rebuttal exhibits, showing something. So can you explain to me what we're looking at here?
Sure. You're looking at an existing and a proposed profile. So the existing profile is the dashed line. Mm-hmm. And presumably 0-0 on the horizontal axis is the wetland. And so we have distances from the edge of road. We have different distances from the edge of fill. We have a cut that's shown. So the hard line, that dark line, if you just follow that over and then just follow it all the way to the end. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that is all the, that's the new proposed surface. Mm-hmm. And then we have a cut line, which goes just below that, right? Yeah. Keep doing that. And go across. Yep. And now go down, follow that line down. Right.
Down
so
there.
That is the cut line. And, mm-hmm. and notably, if you can go to the elbow on the right-hand side,
on this side,
elbow right there. Yeah. If you were to measure that distance between that point and the dashed line, you're about 10.2 feet.
Right.
So the
dashed line is existing contour.
Existing contour, yeah. And we've heard that they're not cutting more than a foot, which is a little odd because this drawing shows a cut of about 10.2 feet to the finished surface. Yeah, that would be 10.2 feet. And I'm not making that up. You can just figure that out from the axis on the vertical axis on the right. And yeah, there you go. And then, yeah, that's 10.2.
I'll put 10 feet.
Okay. And then you'd go approximately 3.5 feet down from there into the, for your infiltration trench.
Okay. So first to clarify, I did ask Mr. Charmbroy how far they would have to cut down for the road. He said about 1 foot. Mm-hmm. So is that consistent with this drawing just as it stands right now?
No. It seems to me like what he's describing is a generalized approach, which is fairly normal, right? That you scrape the top surface materials, a foot or so, you get rid of the topsoil, and then you try and hit a consistent material. You proof roll it, and if that's no good, you cut some more and repeat until you get to something. That is the general approach, and that's what he's describing as a general approach. But when you're on a hillside with a slope, your road needs to be level. So the only place that he's cutting a foot is where the road intersects the existing line. So if you want to go follow that existing,
right there.
Yeah, right there. That's the only place that a foot is cut. Everywhere to the left of it, it's fill upwards of, you know, I don't know what that is. I didn't measure that, but I'm going to say 8 feet, upwards of 8 feet of fill, and maybe 10 feet of fill. And then to the right, we've already described 10 feet of cut, which is a very normal process, right? Balance, cut, and fill. You don't want to haul too much material offsite. You don't want to haul too much material onsite. And that's just good engineering.
Okay. And then tell me about, so how would I draw the French drain? Because the French drain's not included on this drawing, is it?
No.
So
the French drain, yeah.
Where would I put it?
So the French drain, you'd just find the edge of the road on the right-hand side, and you would go and you'd go down approximately 3 feet, and then over 2 feet, and then up 3 feet. Yeah. So okay. it's a little smaller than that, but sure, we can do that. You've just drawn something that's probably about 5 feet, but for illustrative purposes, it's fine.
Fair enough. We're not.
Yeah.
We don't have a drawing from them.
Yeah, I get
But so the French drain is over here, and there's a pipe at the bottom of the drain, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So they have here 6-inch crushed rock base course, free draining. How does the water in the French drain get into that layer under the road?
I have no idea. This is a concept design. This is not a 60% design. This is a concept design. There's a lot of details here that are missing. First of all, you don't pave on top of a 6-inch crush rock base. So there's presumably a road base, 12 inches, and then maybe there's a 6-inch crush rock base below that. So maybe we're talking 24 inches. I don't really know because it's not here. I know we could look at the county standards, but the way it's drawn here, the idea of a French drain connecting to a road base doesn't work because that 6-inch pipe is below that and it's going to carry water out. What I just described is maybe you have a 24-inch prism or an 18-inch prism that is your road, but that pipe is below that 24-inch prism. Not to say that I can't imagine a situation where it could be made to work, but we certainly don't see it here.
Okay. And then what about the angle of it? I mean, it looks like it's pitched up as it moves west.
That's right. Yeah, that's a good point. So the road is crowned towards the uphill, and that is because the preferred approach here is to manage the runoff through the systems that we've been describing, as opposed to letting water run off unmanaged over the hill. So we have presumably a 1% slope, cross slope. So that's one foot per 100. So I don't know what that would be, but we've got a 24 foot wide road approximately. So that 6 inches is likely, if that 6-inch thick crush rock base course were placed as it's shown here, it likely would not flow because of the slope associated with it. Meaning it needs to act like a pipe instead of draining into it. It needs to drain out of it.
Mm. So this design would actually be put, I mean, water is not, assuming we got water from the French drain into that layer, it's not going to flow uphill.
No.
Right.
No. In the bottom side of the road would the right-hand side, the road surface, the edge of pavement on the right-hand side would likely have to be close to being underwater for that to actually transmit.
Uh-huh.
Unless of course it was at depth, but it's not shown at depth.
Okay. And then we have, assuming the water got out of the French drain into this material, went uphill, and then got to this layer here, which is the 12-inch deep and free draining material to replace stripping. Tell me about that. Would that be a good design for conveying water from this location down to this location where it looks like it just sort of ends?
Yeah, so we're lacking a lot of detail to make this happen. So most concern, well, okay. So let me answer your question directly. Could it work if you had water flowing through there? Sure. There's an enormous, but could it fail? Might it not work? There's a lot of detail that would be missing to make this successful. Most importantly, is we've already been shown that we have fines upwards of 40% in this material. There's a very real concern that the crushed rock base or the 12-inch deep free draining material and the French drain themselves can all clog. And the design that we see, for example, in the SDAP, which is not in the record, but it does not show any of those considerations. It doesn't even show filter fabric around it. It shows what I would think of more as something that a farmer would put in fields or something like that. It's a real low duty, real low tech approach. It can work, but not for stormwater management and not when you have high volumes of water flowing through it. So the design, as we've seen, even though it's not admitted, is quite insufficient to manage the conditions that we see. And there's a lot of other things, a lot of recommendations that I would make, which we can go into or not.
Mm-hmm. And then, okay, so then let's assume the water gets into this layer. That layer hasn't become silted up or failed, and the water flows down this interface. What happens when it gets right here?
Yeah. So yeah, it's so the intention here, which I like in theory, is and again, lots of details that need to be addressed here. But what we're showing here now is a reconnection with a colluvium in the uncompacted areas. And it's a great idea. And we should be doing something there. But again, essentially, there's a design that's needed at that toe of slope to facilitate that connection with the colluvium and maybe even an overflow and other things, none of which is shown here. So presumably you would have something like a dispersion trench or something like that. And that is what we heard from Mr. Moody, that there's a dispersion trench that should be shown here that's not.
Okay. So there should be some sort of feature down in this area.
Yeah. And a dispersion trench is just it's a reverse French drain, right? And it's put on a level. And what I mean by that, it's all equal elevation. So the way that dispersion trench would work is as that fills, primarily it feeds the colluvium, which is the intention here, which is what we like to see. And that's what we've been advocating for. And then when that colluvium itself is overwhelmed, meaning that there's no more water that you can push through there, that dispersion trench then tops out and flows over the top and then goes out in shallow, non-concentrated flow across the surface in a non-erodible fashion, quite opposite of what would be happening at the gabion. So this has the elements of success, but it also is missing a lot of critical details and in some very, very, very important substantive changes I think would need to be made.
Mm-hmm. Now, when I was talking to Mr. Heacock, he had said that that CABR when I was talking to Mr. Heacock, he had testified that CABR review requires a 60% design. You just mentioned that briefly in your testimony. And he agreed with me that the purpose of a 60% design is to show that they can meet applicable standards and requirements. Right?
Correct.
And if I go to, let's see here, where is it? This is the applicant's brief again. They say the testimony and evidence will establish that with further refined recommendations that can and will be incorporated into the stormwater design review process, any potential impacts to wetland P2 hydrology will be mitigated. Do you see that?
I do.
And so if we were to go back to exhibit, B14, does this design show that? I mean, does this design show that they are going to mitigate impacts?
No. Now there's some concepts here, and this is the piece that was developed based on Mr. Koger's testimony, which I largely agree with. You know, he's got a good understanding of generally what needs to happen, but I don't believe that what we've heard in either Mr. Moody's testimony or in B14 or in SDAP or anything that we've seen, that we have anything that resembles a design that actually works yet. Even close. And it's not even remotely a 60% design.
Mm-hmm. So what changes, or so if you were, you know, what conditions would you place on an approval of this project to ensure that there in fact are no changes to wetland P2 hydrology?
So there, I think,
well, actually, let's stop. I had another question before that. So we also heard testimony, from, Ms. Decker and also from Mr. Charmbroy, to the effect that, well, when they are out there building this road, you know, if they observe problem areas or they observe water, they will just make adjustments as they go. Right? That they will make adjustments as they go. Is that a reliable way to ensure that there aren't going to be impacts on wetland P2?
No. We need a solid design with construction quality assurance and performance metrics that are included in the approval process, so that, you know, with proper inspections, that this can get built correctly and work as intended.
Okay. And so what kind of conditions would you place on a decision to make sure that happens?
So I think most importantly, if you can go back to the F exhibit, I think most importantly would be a change that would suggest that the full length of what's discharged to wetland P2 should be managed with a French drain system. Okay. Mm-hmm. And why that's necessary is that would ensure that all the runoff to wetland P2 receives some water quality treatment. And importantly, as I'd mentioned about the concerns about channelization, and also I believe if we were to ask Mr. Koger, he would agree, because this is to remain consistent with his observation and more or less my observation, which is that there's surface flow plays a very small, if not insignificant, role in current wetland P2 hydrology. As we've seen, as it's been described by Mr. Moody, surface runoff is going to be play a major role, and it's going to impact wetland hydrology. So to reiterate, full length for everything that's going to be discharged to wetland P2, that there it we need to have a French drain system, and I'm fine with then having high flow bypasses into a gabion outlet system, because it's likely that it would be very big and very cumbersome to try and manage peak flows. So what I'm talking about is essentially our water quality flows. So that's first item. Okay, were you gonna follow up? Was there something else?
Wait, no? So that was okay. The French drain. I mean, but would you just have the same thing, 6-inch crushed rock base under the road, plus the 12-inch the 12-inch free draining material under the fill?
Yeah, no. So I'm gonna go down. I'm gonna give you a bunch of other items. So the next piece is the French drain connection essentially needs to be redesigned. Would need to be designed in a manner that's more consistent with less of like an irrigation drainage trench, which is what we have. What we have is basically like a foundation drain or something. But we're gonna have something that's gonna be managing large volumes of runoff. So it needs a far more rigorous design. It essentially needs to have a layer cake design that would have drainage stone, like what they've shown, but then have a layered design with setting beds and filter fabrics, recognizing that we need to design for a condition that prevents filtration from, clogging from fines. And clogging from fines is going to be a real concern around here, but it can be managed. So that whole piece needs to be redesigned. Then that overflow needs to have a control structure, a hydraulic control structure, that would only discharge water to the gabion at your for extreme events. Essentially, everything over your water quality flow or your water quality volume. And so what that does is it really minimizes the impacts of channelization. Water will not, as a matter of routine, reach that gabion system. It'll only be for large storm events. Okay. Next piece is that I would replace the permeable road base. I think this is my biggest departure from what Mr. Koger has recommended. These next two pieces I'm going to mention. Permeable road base, I think, is a real weak design. I understand what they're trying to do. It's fairly unusual, and it can be replaced very simply with pipes. So right now they have a 225 foot or 250 foot French drain. What I'm talking about is making that French drain far longer, you know, essentially for the full length. And now connecting that French drain to a dispersion trench on the other side, but connected by pipes. That way we could care less about the compaction under the road. Compact it to 99%. That's great. Doesn't matter because we're not creating a dam anymore. We have a French drain that's going to capture the uphill colluvium materials and anything that's draining down that side of the road. It's going to put it in a French drain through pipes, spaced at whatever the interval they need to be, every 20 feet or something like that. And now that goes to a dispersion trench. And that dispersion trench would also be on the bottom side of that fill area. And then what that does is it eliminates that 12-inch stone layer that's underneath the fill. I don't think that's necessary. I think it's unnecessarily complicated. You could be in the entire area would need filter fabric, whereas we can just link a dispersion trench to a series of pipes. Be far simpler, far less likely to clog. And then that dispersion trench would have multiple functional elements. So it would be the depth of the colluvium at that point. So let's say 3 to 4 feet. And then the open top would be managed in a way that it's essentially acting as a level spreader, as I had described previously. So I think that combination would really ensure that road system, that drainage system, would do what we're talking about in terms of the hydrology and hydraulics of the wetland. Although I think we also probably need to talk some about the fill, the buffer fill specification. So there's some pieces that would need to be added to that.
What would you add to the fill specifications?
Okay. So the fill specification, it would be very similar to specifications that I see written for permeable pavements, but slightly different. So we're not trying to make it a permeable road base. Instead, we're just trying to have it mimic pre-development hydrology. So what that would be, and I'm going to sort of repeat what I described earlier, so I'll keep it kind of fairly brief, but that we would have a fill specification that would have two important metrics. You would have your infiltration or your permeability metric. So, and that permeability metric in specs that I've written, what we put them at is no less than 50% of the permeability target. And so what I mean by that, the permeability target in this case is the in situ permeability, which we would measure, would need to be measured. So this is another order condition. Go out and measure the field permeability with a pilot infiltration test that Mr. Koger both wrote and described. So it's easy. We do this all the time. Figure out what that number is. Then your specification is no less than 50% of that. That now becomes your buffer fill specification. It's a permeability spec. It's a compaction spec. And then you modify that gradation as necessary to achieve that. There's nothing complicated about that. We do that all the time. That's the construction quality assurance process. And that's what a geotechnical engineer should be doing in this case. And then lastly, during the construction process, so you'd have to add the construction quality assurance that would then require those performance metrics. So somebody is in the field measuring with a nuclear densometer, what that compaction is. Somebody is measured with an infiltrometer. Somebody's measuring what that infiltration rate of those materials are when they go down and they're verifying that. Lastly, or almost lastly, I would add to that those conditions that we would include, in addition to the performance specs that I just mentioned for the buffer fill, we would add that BMP T513, which is the post-construction soil quality and depth, as described in the building soil guidelines, that's as part of the Washington Department of Ecology Stormwater Management Manual. So there's all this great information about post-construction soils that should be followed, in addition to those specs that we talked about. And then, and then lastly, the approval condition and these revisions should be submitted to the appellants, so that we don't have to, for our benefit as well.
So if I can summarize, to get your to show that the impacts of the fill are going to be temporary, the applicant has proposed to have this conveyance system under the road, right? But that is not a 60% design drawing, right?
No.
And this B14, B14 does not actually show that they're going to be able to convey stormwater under the road in a manner that is going to make those impacts temporary.
That's right. What I see here, I think without your markups, to me, are something that is insufficient to function as intended.
Right. But I mean, it's not like it's impossible. I mean, if they really wanted to get a caber and show that the impacts are going to be temporary, they could produce a design like this. Right.
That's right. We could get rid of half of the stuff that we've been discussing and debating about if simply we put an infiltration trench where they're locating, run some pipes under the road to a dispersion trench, and then just work on a buffer fill specification that meets the needs of a wetland area.
Do you know why they haven't done that yet?
I don't know. It surprises me because I feel that Dr. Cook and I are largely in agreement with most of what Mr. Koger has suggested, and I think that we're not that far off from having something. But in absence of these conditions, as I've mentioned, I don't think we've seen a process here that reflects what is necessary to ensure that the impacts to wetland hydrology will be mitigated or minimized.
Thank you. I have no further questions for Dr. Rosine.
Okay. Ms. Koski, you ready to start for about 15 minutes across?
I'm going to go fill my glass of water. I'll be back in 30 seconds.
Okay, certainly, yeah.
Okay. I'm back. Thank you. Hello, Mrs. Koski.
Hello. I would like to start by drawing your attention to Exhibit F12. Do you see that on your screen?
I do, yes.
This is from the hearing examiner's decision in the last appeal on this caber. And paragraph 465, I'm just going to read that out loud for you.
Sure.
Appellant's concerns that designs of the spine road and stormwater infrastructure would divert extensive amounts of water as compared to the undeveloped conditions, prompt erosion near wetland P2, and degrade water quality because there appeared to be no consideration of best management practices or water quality control measures, do not constitute a basis to reverse or remand the caber, particularly where substantial evidence shows the road and stormwater management plans were reviewed at 60% completed stage, which is the standard practice. The plans relied on by appellant's witnesses are outdated and current plans have not yet been approved by the county. Did you understand that was the finding that the prior examiner made?
Yes.
Do you understand that stormwater plans are only required to be 60%, and whether or not those are at 60% or you think it's less than 60% is not an issue on that we're considering on this limited remand.
I understand that.
So do you agree that the problems that you're identifying that you think exist with this caber and with the proposed fill, can be addressed through stormwater design plans when they're finalized, if those stormwater design plans are done appropriately?
No.
Okay, so you do not think that the impacts from placing the fill can be addressed through stormwater design management?
Not in the narrow sense that you're describing it, no.
Which problem do you think would not be addressed through stormwater design?
The wetland hydrology.
And why not?
That there are many elements to wetland hydrology that would not be covered under a typical stormwater review.
Well, can you be more specific as to which element of the hydrology you don't think will be addressed through stormwater review?
Yeah, so we've been talking about this whole colluvium piece the need for interflow. That is not the type of design that's ever contemplated in a stormwater review. It doesn't happen.
About interflow. So the interflow is something that's being measured, and we have the first reports out on that for those first few months. We spent a lot of time looking at those yesterday. They are measuring the interflow. They're looking at the interflow. I think Dr. Cook and Mr. Koger agreed that that is a seasonal source of hydrology to the wetland, and then making sure that it's not interrupted is being addressed through stormwater design. And you disagree with that?
I disagree with that. And I don't believe that that's what what Dr. Cook said. I think what Dr. Cook said, and I would agree with her, is you have a limited window, and it is insufficient to make this the evaluation that we've talked about. And we can do this all over again. I listened to it for 8 hours yesterday or 4 hours yesterday, but I don't believe that what has been demonstrated through the applicants that we have that there is a clear understanding and basis for the need to maintain wetland hydrology both through for the colluvium as well as the disruption of wetland hydrology. So I think let me try and say that a little more clearly. The section you just read to me in the hearing examiner's findings, I think what that says does not eliminate our concerns with respect to wetland hydrology. I use the term stormwater a lot because I'm a stormwater engineer, but the wetland hydrology is completely relevant through this process. And so I'm thinking about it from a wetland hydrology process, not from a peak flow, not from a volume, that type of information I believe would be important, would be valuable at this stage. And we had an early drainage report that we did review and commented on, but it's my feeling that we are differentiating between the stormwater review that the hearing examiner is calling out here and the wetland hydrology considerations and the wetland impacts.
So what is the hydrological impact to the buffer or the wetland that you think is not going to be addressed through stormwater through stormwater infrastructure? I'm not getting it.
Yeah. I can't tell from what I've observed in the drawings if we are through the use of a French drain and swales and the 6-inch layer of stone underneath, if any of that is going to adequately address the concerns about wetland hydrology. In so much as that I feel like I'm seeing almost the opposite. I feel like I'm seeing steps that are out of sync with one another, and that I don't believe.
Well,
that
whether
the,
you, what
hold
you
on, hold on. Let me finish, please.
My question. I'm not asking.
I think Ms. Kosky ended her question with, "Explain to me. I don't understand." I think Dr. Rosine should be allowed to explain to her his answer.
One specific issue. I'm not asking about your opinions about whether you agree with the county's project.
I'd like the examiner to rule on the objection.
All right. Mr. Rosine, just answer the specific question made by Ms. Kosky, please.
Okay. Ms. Kosky, would you mind asking the question again?
What is the specific source of hydrology impact that you think is not going to be addressed through stormwater design?
Okay, colluvium.
Okay, be more
colluvium. Colluvium and bypass. Yeah, so it's those two concerns.
So what do you mean by colluvium?
Interflow.
How does stormwater design not address interflow?
I think the question would be, how does stormwater design address interflow? There's nothing in your typical stormwater manual that talks about interflow. Nothing. It's only in the wetland, it's only in the buffer averaging piece and the wetland mitigation plan that we talk about wetland hydrology. There is nothing in stormwater that talks about wetland hydrology. Nothing. Zero.
Gotcha. So what do you mean by, how do you think that the current plans at their six, either the stormwater plans at 60%, which was the original question I asked you, if the stormwater design could handle it, and you're saying no, stormwater design can't handle it. And you're saying, I asked, what specific part of the hydrology do you think will not be addressed? And let me expand that. So since you're saying like stormwater doesn't deal with this, what in the mitigation plan in the CABR do you think will not address the impact that you're describing as colluvium?
I mean, most of it, right? I see a system that does not give me confidence that the that it will work and that has that will address these issues of wetland hydrology. So, to repeat, wetland hydrology is and you spend a lot of time talking with Dr. Cook, and we spend a lot of time talking with Mr. Koger about, you know, the main elements of wetland hydrology. They are surface flow, and we can discuss whether that's a little or a lot. We can there is interflow, which is the shallow surficial material that's colluvium. We all agree that it's a significant part at some point, whether it's early season, late season, at some point. And then there is sort of the base flow or the deeper flow condition, which is a small rate, but it's consistent. Okay. I don't believe if we need to maintain wetland hydrology, that roughly means that those three things that we just described need to remain somewhat in balance. There is nothing to me in a stormwater review that talks about deep flow or interflow. The only thing in stormwater review that we talk about is maybe peak flow bypass. Okay. And so there is an enormous amount of room between a wetland hydrology review and a stormwater review. And okay. I will concede with you that there's a lot of overlap too. And but I don't think that it's easy. I don't think it can be accurately said that stormwater review is entirely consistent with wetland hydrology review. They're just not.
Okay. So what I'm hearing from you is that you're concerned that the colluvium, the subsurface interflow, is a problem. Why do you think that is a problem? What about the fill, the mitigation plan, the stormwater design? What is left that's not being addressed through all of those measures?
Oh, I mean, a lot, right? There's a lot.
Very specific, please. Just tell me the thing that's not being addressed.
I don't believe that the French drain and free draining rock system that we've seen, you know, in concept is functional.
Okay, so that's a stormwater design plan.
It's not, because we said colluvium. It's not. I'm talking colluvium there, right?
You're talking of spelling a French drain to allow the passage of water. That's stormwater design. That will French drain.
No, that's not what Mr. Moody said. The French drain is intended to connect to the permeable road base, and then at the high flows, it bypasses to the gabion.
So are you saying if the French drain is designed in accordance with your preferences that you described earlier, then that would satisfy your concern?
Do you mean the ones that I spoke about with Mr. Telegen?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I believe we could establish some approval conditions.
Let's be clear. The stormwater design is not finalized yet, and it's not required.
I understand that. Right? It's not even remotely finalized. Yeah, I understand. Okay.
It was submitted at 60%. So that's where we're at. And it's the applicant is not required to finalize its stormwater plan before it gets its CABR approval. You understand that?
I understand that this design is as close to something as on a napkin with crayons as I've ever seen for a 60% design. This does not, I have concepts, right? In B14, I have what you're calling a groundwater report, which doesn't even have a narrative or numbers. It's just concept flow lines and graphics. No, this is 60% to design to me has dimensions, it has specifications, it has distances, it has numbers that I can review. I don't know what I'm reviewing. All I have is narrative from Mr. Moody talking about something that we can't even talk about.
Okay, well, whether
we have to draw about in crayons.
Whether the county accepted a 60% design, that's an issue that's not before us right now. That's not within the scope of the limited agreement. So,
it's relevant from the standpoint that you're asking me if I understand enough to be convinced that the stormwater review will manage the concerns that I have. And I'm telling you, with the level of detail that I have, which I feel is like at a 25% level, that it is nowhere near sufficient. I'm telling you that the specifications that I've seen from Decker, as an example, which is a compaction fill specification that puts a few sentences in there about maintaining hydraulic conductivity, but has no elements in there to require that. I'm telling you that the information that I've seen, Mrs. Kosky, is grossly deficient, in my perspective, from providing confidence that this will be dealt with for wetland hydrology.
But you agree that if done properly, it can be dealt with?
Yes, I agree with that 100%.
Okay. We have 4 minutes left, Examiner Ulbrichts. I don't know if you'd like me to ask one more question or if you'd prefer that.
Let's wrap it up right now and come back at 12:30 then. We'll see you then.
Thank you. All right, thank you very much.